Talk Back with Gary Nall, Sundays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Nall Show. And now, your host, Gary Nall.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. We're being broadcast all over the world, plus on a lot of land-based stations, and it's growing every single day. In fact, we are growing so fast, and we're asking for you to give us your input of what are the programs that you really like listening to? What are the themes and the topics? Last week, for example, we did a survey of my own program and found that it's broken up, the hours broken up by the in about this fashion. About 43% of the people like to hear wellness, health, nutrition, and healing information. But almost 40% of the people like to hear about social issues, and almost 50% of the people like to hear special commentaries. I try to do at least one commentary per day. The normal number of commentaries for the average radio program is under only one per every 6 months. Even Keith Oberman only did about one per month. So I believe it's a time when we should be focusing upon important issues, both the problem and the solutions. Also, people like to hear environmental issues, especially things they wouldn't be hearing on the other media, and the solutions. So that's why the program is broken up into segments, always leading off with health and nutrition. Excuse me. Today, our entire program is on this theme. I'm going to begin with a commentary from Andrew Weiss, the Skeptical Inquirer, an alternate, and it's called The Wholesale Sedation of America's Youth. I would like your input. I won't read all of it because it's a long commentary. I'll read enough of it for you to get an idea. And then please give us a call and share your points of view. Then I'll be going into the latest on health and healing, giving you some really exciting new information that can help your health. And please keep in mind that all of my information comes from the original science and the peer-reviewed literature. Therefore, if someone says, oh, you know, what are you doing? And you say, well, I'm taking some vitamin E as gamma tocopherol. Why are you doing that? Because it can help protect me against cancer, Alzheimer's, and atherosclerosis. Well, who says? I didn't hear about that. Well, in point of fact, it was an important study that was published in the Journal of Cardiovascular Pharmacology in the current issue, and it was also presented before the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, and also in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease. Well, gee whiz, why wasn't it in the mainstream media? Well, simple issue. How often do you hear about nutrients helping where drugs normally are the preferred therapy and the only therapy with major disease? So you're competing against the pharmaceutical industry's enormous influence over self-censorship in mainstream media. And also official institutions support the pharmaceutical approach. For example, the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease just published a study indicating that those individuals with the highest blood levels of all forms of vitamin E were 55% less likely to develop Alzheimer's disease over a six-year period. The study found that the antioxidant free radical neutralizing potency of vitamin E was responsible for reducing the risk of dementia. And also, from the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, the gamma, G-A-M-M-A, form of vitamin E helps to fight cancer through a variety of critical protective mechanisms. In fact, in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science, the most prestigious scientific body in the United States, it provides insight into how gamma tocopherol traps free radicals, known as reactive nitrogen species that cause DNA strand mutations and can lead to cancerous mutations. And another property of gamma tocopherol is the ability to regulate molecules known as cyclins, C-Y-C-L-I-N-S. And what do? They trap cancer cells and prevent them from reproducing and spreading. And then you have the Journal of Cardiovascular Pharmacology. And here, the gamma tocopherols were shown to be protective against all forms of inflammation in the arteries. Well, when you have any inflammation in your arteries, it's very easy to get inflammation in the artery. Remember, blood flows through those arteries 24/7. And if you have just eaten French fries or pizza, hot dog, alcohol in any quantity, if you had a steak, if you had white bread, if you had sugar, then you have inflammation. That inflammation is going to cause damage inside the arteries. That will lead to atherosclerosis. So, when you take the gamma tocopherol, the gamma isomer, has the unique ability to block stress-induced inflammatory chemical messengers and favorably induce changes in the inner endothelial lining of the coronary arteries. Also, gamma tocopherol increases the production of nitric oxide. And what does that do? I just mentioned this on my show the other day. It helps relax blood vessels and lowers blood pressure. So, how much do you need? I suggest 800 units a day. However, these studies use 400 units. So they got great results with 400. The trouble is most people, when they take vitamin E, they take alpha tocopherol. Now, that's not bad, but gamma tocopherol, G-A-M-M-A, is better. And if you take alpha and gamma together, then it works synergistically to provide really outstanding antioxidant protection and reduce the level of damaging systemic inflammation. Now, the alpha form is the most abundant and is the best known form and is used exclusively in the multivitamin formulations. This means that the gamma type must be provided through diet to provide proper balance of the two isomers. And so I'm suggesting if you eat nuts, walnuts, almonds, pistachios, macadamias, and cashews, sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, chia seeds, and sesame seeds, and have natural oils like flaxseed, walnut, almond, then you're getting your gamma tocopherol. But boy, does it make a difference just to go ahead and have 100 to 200 units a day of gamma tocopherol. And you can buy vitamin E that is a mixed, really well-balanced tocopherol, and then take tocotrienols with it. So you see, to the average person, the person hosting shows are not going to the original scientific literature and looking for independent studies that confirm that the choices we've been making for a long time are not just scientifically based, but are just very proper choices to make. Remember, truth and reality superseded scientific verification. If all we do is wait till something is scientifically verified, we're way behind the curve. And on this show, we like to be ahead of it. So this way, when someone who is misinformed, uninformed, says, oh, there's no benefit to that, well, in their mind, there might not be. But you're way ahead because we have over 500,000 studies on the chemistry, efficacy, potency, safety of vitamins and minerals alone, plus all the other things. Now, one other thing before we go to our commentary. Research published in a leading scientific journal concludes that commercial interests interfere with peer review articles on health risks of genetically modified plants. Now, the study shows that any study funded by an industry like Monsanto or involving scientists employed by an industry are almost certain to produce conclusions in favor of the product's commercialization as opposed to studies not dependent upon such conditioning. For example, when they were doing studies showing all that cookies and artificial colors didn't make a child hyperactive, the studies, when I looked at them, were funded by the cookie companies. And showing that sugar in the American diet was not a big deal, it was by a chocolate company. So these are very biased. You have to look for the independent study. But now this is a major, this is from Food Policy, and here's what they say. The study shows that more than 52% of the 94 analyzed articles did not declare funding source. The study shows that studies funded by industry or involving scientists employed by industry are almost certain to produce conclusions in favor of product commercialization as opposed to studies not dependent upon such conditioning. Well, the studies you almost always hear in the media are commercially funded studies. And finally, one other thing. I mentioned a nutrient. It's amino acids called theanine, T-H-E-A-N-I-N-E. And it is what's in green tea that helps prevent the green tea from being an adjutant. Here's the latest in the Journal of Functional Foods. Quote, daily supplements of L-theanine, an amino acid found in tea, can help people with anxiety focus on their daily activities. Quote, given that L-theanine is a relaxant, it's directly or indirectly involved at the neurochemical level, and thus it is impacted by a number of neurotransmitter systems, unquote. That's the lead scientist, the professor at the University of Shiga Prefecture in Japan. 200 milligrams is what they are suggesting. So if you want to relax and focus, then take 200 milligrams a day of L-theanine. I'm Gary Noll. Now to our short commentary, then some questions, then to our guest. My guest today is Jonathan Emord. I had him on the other day, but I want him to talk in depth about our Food and Drug Administration. Because right now in Europe, all over Europe, if you went into a store that just 2 months ago, you could go in and buy chamomile, or you could buy ginseng, or you could buy coenzyme Q10, or vitamin C, 1,000 milligrams. Today you can't. At least 300 million people no longer have access to nutrients it had for a long time. We saw this coming. We fought this battle, but we could not get enough of the people in Europe engaged. Much like the United States, I did an article some years ago right after Katrina called Watching Katrina. And in the article, it was an article on irony. People who saw Katrina coming and were told, get out of harm's way, walk, they could have walked out of harm's way, except for those who were bedridden, in hospice, nursing homes, critical care, who could not. But for at least 94% of the people, they could. They chose not to. They were watching it. They were almost entranced in this coming apocalypse, but they were doing so almost in a virtual way, as if they were disconnected from it. And we do this all the time. We watch our government spend money that we're giving it with no sense of propriety, no sense of reasonableness. It's like the Republicans say, oh, we shouldn't have big government, but they're the number one cause for big government. And then it's all in the details. Do you mean you don't want big government as far as subsidies to the oil cartels or to the big agra or to the insurance industry or to the military-industrial complex or to the banking industry? That would save us $3.3 trillion that we gave away, plus $740 billion in TARP, none of which benefited the American public. Are you against that? Oh, no, we like socialism for major corporations, especially if we're getting money from them to lobby, from their lobbyists. I see. Well, you see, you didn't say that. You just said you were against big government. And the Democrats, don't cut government. I see. Do you mean don't cut the wars in Afghanistan, in Iraq, Pakistan, Yemen, and other countries, and the support of over 1,100 military bases, 95 per which have no military justification whatsoever, like having a military in Japan and Germany since the end of World War II, and that costs us well over $100 billion a year, plus redundancy and insider dealing and massively profitable no-bid contracts, 10 different companies getting the same identical contracts to do the same identical work, but we're only going to use one of them, building massive weapon systems that will never be used, and we know they're never going to be used, but the people are insiders. Democrats, are you opposed to that? Is there anything a Democrat's opposed to, you know, when it comes to spending? And the answer is no. We love the bigger the government, the more money you can waste, the bigger the bureaucracy. We love it. Do you ever see us criticizing it? Never. Do you ever see us cutting down the size of government? Never. Do you ever see us telling the world that a lot of these things are corrupt at the state level, local level, and federal level? Never. Do you ever see us challenging some of the corrupt unions? You can be pro-union because of what it represents as an ideal. You can be opposed to the corruption of what most unions represent today. They're just power blocks and by politicians. And the answer is never. So, both Democrats and Republicans are pathologically dysfunctional people. And that's why we here are independent. And those evolve from independence to progressive, meaning stop complaining, see the problem, acknowledge it, and find a solution. That's all progressive is. Someone who seeks a solution that is reasonable and responsible, that benefits us as a whole, without needing to take sides. It's just if you're still stuck up in thinking that the problem is left and the problem is right, you'll never have a solution. Anyhow, so when it comes to the wholesale sedation of America's youth, both the Democrats and Republicans, all members of Congress, all members of government, all members of the medical community are equally responsible for destroying our children. The AMA, a criminal organization, I should know, I helped bring it down, but of course, find him guilty of violating the Sherman Antitrust Act and restraint of trade against chiropractors, and their guilt was upheld in the Supreme Court. That warranted a tiny little mention in the New York Times, but not a full explanation of how this organization for 35 years had a Department of Investigations that was originally formed by one of the most demented, vile human beings in the history of American medicine, a man named Fishbein, who ran the AMA as if it was own private fiefdom. And he was the one who suggested the ads that 47,000 doctors recommend Lucky Strikes because it calms women's nerves and soothes their throat. Yeah, this is the man that had that power. Anyhow, but no one decided to look at how dirty and bad and corrupt the AMA was. Well, they are. But did it hurt his reputation? Not at all. Its power, its membership? Not at all. Gee whiz, what double standard. You get caught, your reputation smeared for life. They get caught, who cares? But no one seems to care about our children in the United States because they're a profit stream. Here's what Andrew Weiss has to say about it. I'm going to ask Jonathan Emord, who's won more cases against the FDA than any other attorney in history, for his insights on this as well. Quote, the Journal of the American Medical Association published the results of a study indicating that 200,000 2-to-4-year-olds had been prescribed Ritalin for, quote, an attention disorder. Judging by the response, the image of hundreds of thousands of mothers grinding up stimulants to put into sippy cups of their preschoolers was apparently not a pretty one. Most national magazines and newspapers covered the story. Some even expressed dismay or outrage at this exacerbation of what already seemed like a juggernaut of hyper-medicalizing children. The public reaction, however, was tame. The medical community, after a moment's pause, continued unfazed, giving prescriptions to children, some as young as 6 months of age. Today, the total toddler count is well past a million, and influential psychiatrists have insisted that mental health prescriptions are appropriate for children as young as 6 months. For the pharmaceutical companies, this is progress. 2,357,000 children were diagnosed with ADD in just 15 years ago, twice the number diagnosed 5 years before that. By 1991, 3.4% of all American children had received a stimulant prescription for an attention disorder. Today, that number is closer to 10%. Stimulants already aren't the only drugs being given out like candy to our children. A variety of other psychotropics like antidepressants, antipsychotics, and sedatives are finding their way into babies' medicine cabinets in large numbers. In fact, the worldwide market for these drugs is growing at a rate of 10% a year. That's $20 billion in sales of antipsychotics alone. And while the sheer volume of psychotropics being prescribed for children might, in and of itself, produce alarm, there has not been a substantial backlash against drug use, in large part because of the widespread perception that medically authorized drugs must be safe. And as an aside, Hillary Clinton is the primary spokesperson for promoting the drugging of our children, as she believes that everything the psychiatric community says about catch mental illness early, well, then you put them on drugs. Yet there is a considerable evidence that psychoactive drugs do not take second place to other controlled pharmaceuticals in carrying grave and substantial risks. All classes of psychoactive drugs are associated with patient deaths, and each produces serious side effects, some of which are life-threatening. Researchers analyzed 250,000 patients in the Netherlands and concluded, quote, we can be reasonably sure that Antipsychotics are associated in something like a 300% increase in sudden cardiac death, and perhaps that older antipsychotics may be worse. In 2007, the FDA chose to beef up its black box warning and on antidepressants, concluding, quote, the trend across age groups toward an association between antidepressant suicidality was convincing, particularly when superimposed on earlier analysis of data on adolescents from randomized controlled trials. Yeah, well, did you stop it? Did you ban it? Did you go public with it? Not at all. That's not the FDA's way. According to a confidential FDA report, prolonged administration of antiamphetamines, and that's what kids with ADD and ADHD are given, quote, may lead to drug dependence and must be avoided. They further reported, quote, misuse of amphetamines may cause sudden death and serious cardiovascular adverse effects, unquote. The risk of fatal toxic reactions from lithium carbonate, a not uncommon treatment for bipolar disorder, has been well documented since the 1950s. Incidents of fatal seizures from sedative hypnotics, especially when mixed with alcohol, have been recorded since the 1920s. Psychotropics carry non-fatal risks as well. Physical dependence, severe withdrawal symptoms are virtually associated with every single psychoactive drug. Psychological addiction is axiomatic. Concomitant side effects range from unpleasant to devastating, including insulin resistance, narcolepsy, tardive dyskinesia. 20% of antipsychotic patients are involved where there's uncontrolled facial movements and sometimes jerking and twisting movements of the body, and vomiting, allergic reactions, accelerated appetite, uncontrolled blinking, slurring speech, diabetes, balance irregularities, irregular heartbeat, chest pain, sleep disorders, fever, and severe headaches. The attempt to control these side effects has resulted in many children taking as many as 8 additional drugs every day. But this has only compounded the problem. Each of these drugs has its own unwanted side effects of its own. The child drug market has also spawned a vigorous black market in high schools and colleges, particularly for stimulants. Students have learned to fake the symptoms of ADD in order to obtain amphetamine prescriptions that are subsequently sold to fellow students. Such shopping for prescription drugs has even spawned a new verb. The practice is commonly called farming. A 2005 report from the Partnership for Drug-Free America, based on a survey of more than 7,300 teenagers, found that 10% of all teenagers had tried prescription stimulants without a doctor's order, and 29% of those surveyed said they had close friends who had abused prescription stimulants. In a large sense, the whole undertaking has had the disturbing effect of making drug use an accepted part of childhood, and few cultures anywhere on earth and any time in the past have been so willing to provide stimulants and sedative hypnotics to their offspring, especially at such tender ages. An entire generation of young people has been brought up to believe that drug-seeking behavior is both rational and respectable, and that most psychological problems have a pharmaceutical solution. With the ubiquity of psychotropics, children now have the means, opportunity, example, and encouragement to develop a lifelong habit of self-medicating. Common population estimates, my figures, are 10 million. Let me repeat that number. 10 million American children, ages 2 to 18, receiving prescriptions for ADD and ADHD and bipolar disorders, autism, simple depression, etc. And it goes on from there about how profitable it is and how the psychiatrists, who, by the way, have no basis in science, and have no science on their side. If you reviewed all the scientific literature, you'd find there has never been any proof ever of a brain chemical imbalance leading to depression, or that their drugs can correct that brain chemical imbalance. That's all a myth. And if you freeze frame the ad on television where it says, oh, you know, brain chemical imbalance, they don't say definite. They'll say the possibility of, or the belief in. And yet the public doesn't see that. I've done an important film called The Drugging of Our Children 3 years ago. I'm doing a new one now. I'm very concerned. The number one cause of death in 10 to 14-year-old boys is suicide. We never had suicide in 10 to 14-year-old boys in the past. This generation is the generation that is totally drugged. It's not their fault. It's the fault of their parents, the medical community, the teachers, the psychologists, the psychiatrists, the pediatricians, all government employees, all members of the American media. We have about 95% of the American population who are to blame. And it's watching Katrina, watching the entire generation be destroyed, and no one doing a damn thing about it except continuing it. I'm Gary Noll. Those are my thoughts. I'd like to hear yours now. I'm going to give you our number to call in, and then we're going to take a few of your calls and then go to my guest, Jonathan Emord, who is going to take on the FDA, new supplement laws. In fact, it's entirely conceivable under this administration, under this president, who is anti-vitamins, anti-freedom of choice, anti-organic, he's definitely pro-alcohol, pro-tobacco, pro-drugs, pro-pharma, pro-insurance. We've never had a more Republican president who has disguised himself as a liberal. That he is not. Boy, is this a game that people haven't realized how they're being played. So your rights to use your supplements may be taken away from you in the very near future. You think it can happen here? That's wishful thinking. It can. The difference is we take our supplements and our freedom of choice very seriously here. Europeans don't give a damn. As a result, they just had their rights taken away. Now they're wondering, gee whiz, was this right? Well, we'll talk about that as well. Give us a call, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. What do you think about the idea that our children have no value whatsoever in America, except as a profit stream? And therefore, it's very important that you get your kid diagnosed, as Hillary believes we should, with some form of psychiatric diagnosis, and immediately get them into treatment for their own benefit, to protect society and help the child, of course, and for no other reason. And for your child at the age of 6 months begin to cry and then laugh, clearly any psychiatrist and psychologist in the United States, certainly every pediatrician alive, would say your child has bipolar. And who are we? Who are we to judge them? Aren't they always right about everything? Your thoughts coming back at you. I'd like to hear your point of view. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Welcome you. I'm Gary Noll. Let's say hello to Otto from Michigan. Hi, Otto.
I have a 17-year-old son, and I basically block both sides because all the time they try to feed him junk food, and I was just wondering what you feel about that.
What do I feel about junk food?
I just block both sides from seeing him because they constantly try to give him junk food all the time, and They just don't see it.
Well, let's back up a moment. What don't they see?
They just believe in vaccines. They believe in fluoride. They just believe in everything that's wrong.
Okay, but that's their belief. Now, they have a right to that belief, and I won't question their right to believe, even in things that are wrong. I believe that a person has a right to believe in Glenn Beck and his very strange notions of history, or Constitution, or a Founding Fathers, of which he seems to have a peculiar bent. But that's his right. I don't deny him that. Instead, what you have to do is establish a different belief, one that challenges him. For example, right now we're working on a major scientific paper. You've heard of the Quackbusters. Well, what we've done is we've taken the actual attacks by the Quackbusters on myself and all the other healthcare practitioners and holistic doctors. And we just take one statement at a time, verbatim, showing that there is no science behind their statement, purely opinion, which they have a right to. I'm not questioning that. But then, for example, they said there's no benefit whatsoever nutritionally to chlorophyll. Then we give all the scientific literature from peer-reviewed journals on the benefits of chlorophyll, and there are about 200 studies. So on the one hand, you can weigh. This is a person that the New York Times has quoted. This is a person that's testified as an expert in Congress. This is a person that the Consumer Reports, to their everlasting shame, allowed to be an expert in attacking chiropractic as unscientific. And yet, this is a person that's never right. So what you have to do is you have to do your homework, Otto, and that means doing the following. Take each of the junk foods. Whatever, make your choice. Pizzas, hot dogs, hamburgers, french fries, colas. And then look at see what they're made up of. And then find the actual scientific studies, independent studies, that show what happens to the body, especially a young body, and these studies exist, when you eat these foods, when you drink these beverages. The incidence of diabetes, heart disease, arthritis in children, obesity, and what that leads to, high blood pressure, a greater chance of dying early. This is the first generation in American history where the children will not live as long as their parents. So once you have done that homework, doing one piece at a time, and then showing this is what they want to give my children or my child, and here's why I'm opposed. So A, you're not attacking them personally because they could be doing something with the belief that it's okay. What you're doing then is educating and informing them of the truth. And that way, if you just keep doing each week one more food or one more negative thing, artificial sweeteners, fluoride. Now, if you go up on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com or GaryNall.com, either one, you will see at least 300 major original investigative reports. You will see thousands of articles. I've already done the homework for you. I've done the article for you. All you have to do is extrapolate it to make your argument. And you can use the references. My articles are used in courts of law. When I do an article, it's done in real scholarship because many activists and many organizations need something that their attorneys can take into a court and say, here is irrefutable scientific proof on what's wrong with fluoride or what's wrong with the mercury in fillings or what's wrong with vaccines. So the level of scholarship in my articles is extensive, and I've never been rebutted on points of fact. So that you already have at your disposal. So now the impetus is upon you to take what's already there, reformulate that into a series of small parent school district issues. And so if you just keep peppering them over and over again, and then you start getting in onto the internets where other parents are, at least other parents who did not know how damaging these foods are, what it will do to a child and to a child's health, now they become educated. Now a parent that didn't know the facts now has a different point of view, and now they may see that what you're doing is actually trying to help their children as well as your own, and now you have a base that can go forward and ask for community boards, school boards, and hold hearings, and then bring in your articles. Now, they're not going to have articles. There are no articles, none, zero, not one single article in the world that supports drinking Coca-Cola will actually increase the health of your child. But I can give you a lot of articles of what all colas will do against a child's health, supported by good science. That's what I would suggest you do, Otto. Okay?
Good time.
All right, all the best. Thank you for calling from Michigan. I'm going to go to my guest now. I'm not going to take the other calls this moment because my guest has a lot to say, and I want to give him all the time possible. Jonathan Emord, E-M-O-R-D, is the nation's leading free speech attorney, one of them, and he's defeated the FDA 6 times in federal court. That's more than any other attorney in American history. In fact, he's known as the FDA Dragon Slayer. And he is also the author of a critically acclaimed, well, two books, The Ultimate Price and The Rise of Tyranny and Global Censorship of Health Information. Nice to have you back with us, Jonathan.
Good to be with you, Gary.
Jonathan, I'm going to ask you three basic questions, and I'm going to turn it over to you so I don't have to interrupt you. I like to give my guests unlimited amounts of time to talk, all right?
Okay.
One, I would like for you to talk, give a response to the editorial, both I was reading from and my own input concerning the FDA knowing that what our children was getting in the way of prescription antidepressants were not helping them, that a sugar pill was just as effective, and that the side effects were extremely serious, leading to disabilities and death and addiction. Secondly, talk about Europe and what they no longer have freedom of choice there. Third, is it possible that our freedoms of choice, which have been under attack for over 40 years, will that succeed in the United States as it did in Europe? And if not, why not? And if so, why? The forum is yours.
Okay. Well, on the subject of Ritalin and other serotonin reuptake inhibitor drugs that have been now prescribed by psychiatrists for children, some of them as young as but 6 or 7 months old, for well over a decade now, the story goes back quite a distance, right to the origin of the first approval of the serotonin reuptake inhibitors. At that time, there was scientific controversy concerning whether these drugs would increase suicidality. And a FDA medical reviewer named Robert Mosbacher was assigned the task of reviewing the scientific evidence concerning the association between these drugs and suicidality and determine whether or not there was a sound basis for that position. Now, the agency carefully chose Mosbacher because Mosholder had been involved with the agency's determination to approve these kinds of drugs. So he presumably had a vested interest in defending his decisions in favor of approval. But as he was going through the research, as he considered all of the European studies associating these drugs with an increased risk of suicidality, he had an epiphany moment in which he realized, much to his horror and chagrin, that he had been privy and party to a movement within the agency to approve drugs that actually increased the risk of suicidality in children. And actually, as we've come to know, increases suicidality universally. But when he discovered this information, he wrote a thorough report in response to his assignment from his superiors, in which he said that these drugs do appear to increase the risk of suicidality in children, and that these drugs ought not be available in the market for children. Now, as it turns out, in England, that very action was taken by the British health authorities. They banned the use of those drugs by physicians in England for children, including Ritalin, Paxil, Zoloft. But in the United States, what happened? Mosholder was ostracized. His report was suppressed. He was threatened with investigation by the Office of Internal Investigation at FDA. And he became a pariah within the agency, an untouchable. People ignored him. And this then led him to speak out publicly. And then it became known that one of the key scientists involved in this whole process actually agreed with the evidence of the increased risk of suicidality. This created a political firestorm and ultimately led many, many years later, we're talking over a decade later, to warnings being placed on the drugs, but not to their elimination from the market for pediatric use. And to this day, all across the United States, if you go into any urban grade school, you'll see around lunchtime a line forming in front of the nurse's office as kids go in to get their daily fix of these drugs. The most overprescribed condition in children is ADHD and ADD. and the most overprescribed drugs are those that treat those conditions, and the consequences are horrific. Although it is, these drugs are said not to be addictive by the companies, the evidence is quite to the contrary. In fact, there are clinics around the country that treat addictions associated with these drugs, and the movement is in the opposite direction to get kids weaned of these drugs is quite significant. Parents, children, groups have been formed. Doctors are treating these kids and finding it very difficult to stop the addiction. These are dangerous drugs. They change the mental pathways in a manner that is equivalent to what cocaine does in the brain. They're very dangerous drugs, and this government should be ashamed of itself for allowing that to happen. On your second question concerning Europe, it is a disaster. The European food safety, this is what happened in Europe. The European Union, which in and of itself is something that most Americans would find horrific were it to happen here, the European Union has, it is the ceding of sovereignty of some 27 member nations to a universal government for initially for trade issues, but now for all manner of issues, trade, business, even human rights issues. So what has happened by the ceding of sovereignty to the European Union is, let's say you're a person in Ireland and you happen to have a dispute with a company that is in Ireland, but it raises issues that are of concern to the Union. Your case then would be transferred by the Irish courts to perhaps Strasbourg for trial before judges who are not even from your country, under a law that is not beholden to the law of your country. So you are just fetched off to another jurisdiction and have your rights determined there. It is a bit like what the Americans revolted against in the American Revolution when the colonists were forcibly detained and tried outside the country in England for acts that occurred within the colonies. They consider that to be a violation of their right to a fair trial and their right to a jury of their peers. That's why jury of the peers occurs in the Constitution, is precisely to prevent this sort of extradition of a person. But in any event, that's a bit of an aside. The bigger picture that you're asking about on supplements, though, is defined by this universe where the European Union has jurisdiction over foods and drugs and dietary supplements sold in the European Union and of all the, in all the member states. What they have determined in the case of dietary supplements is the worst circumstance that you could imagine if you believe that nutrition is important, as do I, and that is that the presumption in the law is that no dietary supplement is safe, even ones that have been consumed for hundreds and some thousands of years, the ingredients having been consumed for thousands of years, without incident. All of them are presumed unsafe unless the industry and scientific dossiers can prove to the European Food Safety Authority's satisfaction that the product is safe. Now, the safety test is also grossly distorted. Under the historic toxicological principle that governs in most sensible scientific communities, you look at what's known as the Paracelsian principle. That is, the dose determines toxicity. When it's a food substance, food substances are presumptively safe because of the history of safe ingestion, and you look for the dose level at which they lose their safety. Everything, including water, consumed at some dose level produces toxicity, of course. So you would then set a toxic level determination near that level at which we understand a adverse reaction to be triggered. And that then affords the marketplace the opportunity to trade in nutrients at levels that are safe. Under the European Union system, they've reversed the Paracelsian principle here, and have instead adopted what's known as the precautionary principle. And under the precautionary principle, it is again the situation that the industry is presumed to be selling a product that is unsafe. And unless the industry can prove it's safe at every dose level, it is presumed unsafe. So they, by creating this reverse presumption, essentially guilt until proven innocent if you're in this industry, sort of the Napoleonic Code approach, they have achieved a remarkable suppression of the availability of products, and then also of the right to communicate health information in the market. Unlike in the United States, in Europe under this system from the European Food Safety Authority, any statement of a health benefit associated with a product, including what we here refer to as structure function claims, that is, claims that a nutrient will affect a body's structure or function without reference to a disease, any such claim is prohibited in the European Union unless the party that wishes to make it convinces the European Food Safety Authority that scientific evidence supports the claim to a near-conclusive degree. As a consequence, while before this system of censorship and prior restraint existed, there was much communication in Europe about the association of such things as omega-3 fatty acids and heart healthy effects, reduction in thrombosis risk, and so forth. Those things are now absolutely prohibited. So you end up with an environment that is this in Europe. You can sell a dietary supplement if the European Food Safety Authority has approved it, but most likely at a dose level that will cause no physiological effect of any remark. And that is because any nutrient level that produces a beneficial physiological effect is immediately presumed unsafe under this system, because the physiological effect itself is considered an alteration of a pre-existing condition in the body that poses risk. So you end up with essentially at or below RDI levels for certain nutrients allowed into the market, and all other nutrients will effectively be banned, particularly herbal products, which they are quite loath to approve. So it is a nutrition science dark age in Europe. Now, your last question about can it happen here? Well, it can happen here, and it is happening here. I speak tomorrow on Capitol Hill, the mall side of the United States Capitol, to a group of farmers from across the United States, several hundred of them, who are organic farmers. And they are coming to Washington because one of their own, and actually more than one, but the most popular one is the one that the group that has hired me to represent them is supporting. Organic farmers across the country are experiencing the squeeze from the Food and Drug Administration that is using both the recently passed Food Safety Modernization Act, misnomer, common in Washington, doublespeak, to drive out of existence producers at the local level who have small farms who can't adhere to the massive record-keeping requirements and quality control verification procedures that they're imposing on all dietary supplement companies, resulting in a reduction in the number of parties in the marketplace by about 25% and a significant increase in anti-competitive protection for the market leaders. So these types of industrial regulations are being imposed on small agrarian organic communities and wiping them out. But tomorrow's rally is another example of how this progress in the wrong direction is taking place. A farmer in Kinzers, Pennsylvania, named Dan Algier, who is an Amish farmer, has a dairy farm there. He harvests from his cows raw milk. Now, his cows are very healthy. They are grass-fed animals. He's very, very kind to his animals, and he takes good care of them, and they happen to be extremely healthy. And he's quick to ensure that only healthy animals are ones that he obtains milk from. His milk is immediately refrigerated. It has been consumed by hundreds of people safely. It has been consumed within that Amish community in Dutch, Pennsylvania, for well over 100 years safely. And all of a sudden, for this fellow, he starts receiving orders from a Maryland purchaser. Maryland purchaser contacts him, asks for 23 different orders, causing him to load up his truck, his refrigerated truck, with a large quantity of milk, going into Maryland, going to a house, delivering the milk to that house, and then returning, along with one of his fellow Amish community members who helped him do it. Unbeknownst to him, this was an FDA sting operation. The people who placed the order were undercover agents. The house that he went to was a government-owned house in a suburban community that was used for the purpose of these entrapment stings. Unbeknownst to him, it was illegal by FDA regulation to sell unpasteurized milk across state bounds. He was then the subject of a rather humiliating and abusive and oppressive raid by the FDA. The FDA, along with the U.S. Marshals Service, sent two black SUVs with tinted windows up his long dirt road to his farm at about 5 in the morning, one morning, while he was milking his cows, leaving one barn. He noticed these vehicles approaching without their lights on, strangely, and oddly being these black SUVs, which had never been something he had seen coming up his farm, saw them on television on when, you know, outside the community, but not something he had ever seen before in his own community. So they arrive, and as he's walking from one barn to the next, one of the agents approaches him, taps him on the shoulder, and says in a stern voice, "Where's the milk?" He looks at them. He realizes they're federal agents. He can see U.S. Marshals Service on their clothes. He says, the milk's in the cows. The milk is also in these refrigerated facilities. Here's a cooler that has milk in it. Here is a walk-in cooler that also has milk in it. They go in. They take an inventory. They determine what milk is there, and they leave. A short time thereafter, he's sued in the United States District Court in Pennsylvania for violating the adulteration provisions of the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, for violating this regulation against sale of interstate commerce. They intend on obtaining from him the cost of their entire investigation of him for over a year when they performed a clandestine operation to get that reimbursed, plus all the court costs and legal fees, and a permanent injunction against his sale of unpasteurized milk. Now, you may wonder whether unpasteurized milk is unsafe. Well, unpasteurized milk, if it comes from healthy cows, is refrigerated and is consumed within the expiration date period, is safe. Pasteurized milk has a safety profile that is not superior. Pasteurized milk eliminates the pathogens through pasteurization, but when the product is left improperly cared for, it becomes contaminated with pathogens again, Listeria, Salmonella, E. coli, and proper handling results in this sort of thing. In the United States, every year, there are thousands of people who become ill from these contaminants in pasteurized milk, and hundreds die from consuming pasteurized milk, improperly handled, otherwise contaminated. And here you have an individual who meticulously cares for his animals, harvests milk from them that is wholesome, refrigerates the milk immediately, sells the milk promptly, ensures its consumption within a reasonable period from its harvesting, and has no incident in his history of anyone becoming ill. Moreover, his raw milk has more vitamins, minerals, and healthy fats in it than the pasteurized milk that you would pick up at the grocery store. But more importantly than anything else is that our government is presuming to deny the American citizen the right to choose a product that has been safely consumed by people on Earth for over 2,000 years when properly handled, and is condemning people who operate honestly and in good faith with healthy products as if they were making something that was a contraband, inherently unsafe, and would kill people.
Jonathan, we're out of time. I appreciate these insights. This is a terrifying story, but a common one, and happens every day. It's just the public is not aware of this. Your website, please?
Emord, EMORD.com.
And any phone numbers or contacts so we can be up with you on a call to action against the FDA on this?
Yes, there is grassfedonthehill.com. You can go there. You can learn about the rally. You can also make financial contributions to help out this farmer and others who are similarly situated who can't afford legal defense and are really being victimized by an abusive government.
We appreciate very much all your efforts on our behalf out there. We look forward to updates. Anytime you have an update on something important, please contact us so we can have you on. All right?
We sure will. Take care.
The people's lawyer, Jonathan Emord, he has taken on the FDA and won more than any other lawyer. Let's hope him well in this case. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening in. I'm Gary Knoll. Look forward to sharing more with you tomorrow. Now, we're going right over on the Progressive Radio Network and say hello to Mike Rupert. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Gary. How are you?
Good. What's on your show tonight?
Well, we are talking about tonight events over the last 4 days, which relate to Fukushima and Japan, which relate to European debt, which relate to a whole bunch of things. It's clear that in the last 4 days, the world has reached a whole new level of crisis instability, and it's pretty clear now that the new world order is chaos.
Also, did you see 60 Minutes tonight?
No, I missed it.
Okay. The second segment was with the former head of intelligence for all of Pakistan, top man, and arguably the third most powerful man in all Pakistan. He left government a year ago. He stated on the record that he told Musharraf, the president of Pakistan, in 2006, that Osama bin Laden was staying in the community where he's in. In fact, he pinpointed it within 12 miles, and Musharraf didn't want to hear about it, became physically angry at him, and it started to attack him, and Karzai from Afghanistan actually interceded. He also said that he shared that same information with American intelligence. That means that now we know that American intelligence knew as early as 2006, possibly 2005, or 6 years, 5 to 6 years ago, exactly where bin Laden was, and could have gotten him at any given time. They also knew, according to this man, of all the top people in the Taliban, the town where they were in, the town has never been gone after, they were never gone after, and yet she did not press them on these. He opened a door that she should have asked some very important questions. Are you saying that the CIA and all, and because he said that everything he knew he shared daily with the CIA. So this is important that now we know that America, as I suspected, I suspect this is an October surprise. I suspect that that this White House knew all along where bin Laden was, the CIA knew, but they were waiting for a political opportunity, just like Reagan did with getting the prisoners out of Iran when it would benefit them. Those are my own personal thoughts. Hopefully at some point you can take these issues on yourself.
We can pick that up, Gary. That's not inconsistent at all with what I've been writing about for almost a decade.
Great. Michael Rupert's program coming at you right now. Please stay with us.